First things first, a new Nigeria is possible. All eyes on the judiciary.
Good afternoon. Without taking much of our time, I just wanted to point out the part of the EU report that spoke about the IDPs. That, when I read that part of it, right, it actually got to me, because I've always talked about the IDPs and the situations they're having to face in Nigeria. You know, I think that's one group of people that, yes, we get to talk about once in a while, but I think we really need to talk about more often. These are people that used to have homes like you and I. You know, many times when we hear IDPs, we think it's just people that were sacked from their villages to places, to the camps and all that. So many of these people were rich fellows. So many of these people had lives of their own. You know, I've had to meet with a couple of them, and it's disheartening how someone had a life, had it going. Okay, I met a man who used to own a bakery. He used to own a bakery. He used to bake bread. He used to bake all sorts of things. And he lost all that because his bakery was destroyed. His house was destroyed. And he had to run with his family. You know, when you hear stories like that, it's really heartbreaking. And to have had the EU report highlight it was very good. To highlight the fact that these particular persons have been disenfranchised. Yeah, Emily mentioned, you know, very briefly, but if you go back to read, even though it was brief, the briefing was still concise. It was concise, it was precise by the EU. They actually mentioned all the disenfranchisement that gets to meet these people, the vulnerability of these people to sell their votes. Yes, because many times these politicians will go there and offer them money. Because, I mean, these people practically do not have a life anymore. They have to feed on whatever comes to them. Okay, so they have to feed on whatever comes to them. So whatever anybody makes to offer them, they get to take. The EU report also mentions that they were not even properly educated as per issues concerning the elections. You know, we had the voters education. Every now and then we would have, we are supposed to be doing this, you're supposed to do that, this is what you do with your voters card and all that. They did not have all that going for them. They were practically disenfranchised on all fronts. They didn't have anyone going there to say, okay, we're going to bring the machines down to you to have you register. It happened in a couple of IDP camps, but not all. I think it was somebody from Benue, a minister, a pastor from Benue or was it Kaduna South, that was saying that just in either Benue or Kaduna alone, thereabout, they have up to 30,000 IDP camps. We're not saying 30,000 people, the camps. 30,000. It doesn't make sense. I don't get it. That thing drives me crazy. It doesn't make sense. If we have 30,000 IDP camps, you can begin to imagine the number of people that were disenfranchised at that level. You know, the only person, when it comes to leaders in Nigeria, that have been able to make sense out of IDP camps so far for me has been Peter Obi. Not because this was the man I voted for, but yes, that's part of why I voted for him. Why? Because every time I talk about IDPs, I remember one time on a WhatsApp group, a group of missionaries, and they were talking about taking clothes, food, and all that to IDPs and all that. I gave kudos to them, but I said to them, this is not the solution to these people. We cannot just continue to always just take clothes, take food. Good thing. I even want to do something like that. I'm looking at doing something like that between this weekend and next week. Yeah, but the solution to that problem is getting them back to their homes. I am asking this question. I do not understand. Are these bandits greater than our soldiers? Are they greater than our air force, than our armed forces? How is it that we cannot have our armed forces go to these people's homes where they've been kicked out and chase away these bandits? I mean, do whatever needs to be done and get these people back to their homes. Have you seen the camps? Have you seen a picture of the camps where these people stay? It's not. See, you don't even want to see it. It's heartbreaking. You know, but I'm just glad that the EU report captured this part of the Nigerian system, this thing that's been going on. It's also true that one of the reasons why the IDP camps have been there for years and they keep adding to them is because some people are benefiting from the whole thing. Yeah, the kind of monies that people make applications for, and these monies never even get down to the IDPs and all that. Yeah, but something needs to be done. Good enough, it was captured. It was, well, like I said, it was brief, but it was precise. It was straight to the point as to what and what was going down with these people. Oh, another part of it that was mentioned, another group of people that were mentioned alongside the IDPs are people with disabilities. Yeah, I remember seeing a video that this guy made, I think African, what's his name, one of these comedians. And it was just heartbreaking to see that we don't just have any system in place for persons with disabilities. You would see a crippled person, and usually in Nigeria, we are quick to write those people off. But these are people that they are still human beings, and they still have gifts, they still have talents, they still have life, and they can still contribute to the society. They can still give to the society. They can still create value in and for the society. But just because they have one disability or the other, they are being looked down upon, and it was captured. It was captured in the EU report that this group of people were also disenfranchised. Nothing was put in place to take care of their own kind of people. You know, to see that, yes, they participated fully as members of the society. Nothing was put in place for them. They were just ignored. They were neglected. It was almost as though they were rejected. Both the IDPs and the people with disabilities, it seemed like they were rejected. Like, if there's anything, may English forgive me. I want to use the word rejectees, if there's anything. I know there's nothing like that. But it's like they are rejectees of the society, like cast away, you know. So I am just happy that that part of it was captured. Since we are looking at issues that EU report covered for us to look into to better our Nigeria, I just thought that I should bring up that part of it. And just something that Emily said about money is being given to our clergy, you know, men of God and the rest of them, to talk to the people to avoid them electoral violence and the rest. Emily, I was just going to say to you that so far as the Nigerian system is concerned, now until we get a change, right, so far these monies they give to these clergymen actually are given to them to incite the violence, not to stop it, to incite. Let me give you a typical example. You give a clergyman, these politicians go and say, okay, I'm from so-so-so party, and I want you to tell your people to vote for my party and to stand like anybody that tries to do anything, they should. And then the clergymen go to their people and then they are telling them, talking to them and saying to them, hey, this is the person you're going to vote for, you know? And then they use religion to try to back up this thing. And then they tell them, no matter what it will cost, even if it will cost your life, even if it will cost, you know, you're fighting for your, for sometimes they tell them they're fighting for their God, you're fighting for this, you're fighting for that, inciting them to violence already, but in the name of religion, hiding behind the cloak of religion. So far, so good, our clergymen have not, the clergymen and women have not done well in propagating the gospel of anti-violence. If anything, they have propagated violence, right? And just to add to that, you know, during the campaign, I was a grassroots mobilizer. I remember going to one of the local governments in Kano State, where I reside. And when I was talking to the people, they asked me a question at the end of the day. They said, if you're asking us, because for them, a good number of them had resolved not to come out for to vote. They had decided we're not going to vote. And by the time I was done with talking to them and giving them reasons why they should come out and vote and who they should vote for, they had to ask me. They said, okay, fine, with everything you've said, we want to vote again. We want to come out and vote again and cast our votes. But you need to know that over the years, what's been happening to us is when we come out and vote for a candidate of our choice, those who vote for majority, there's the people who vote for a different candidate, when they see that, okay, we voted for this person and not their own candidate, after the elections, they come to attack us. Not even during the elections, after the elections, they come to kill us, they come to attack us. What do you want us to do? If we're going to face this, what do we do? I was glad that when that question was thrown at me, okay, it was thrown at me like a couple of times, different local governments. But in one of the local governments, it was one of the locals that stood up and said, this time around, if they come at us, we'll have to fight back. But you know that that is already, even though it's a self-defense strategy, it's already violence. You know, you already have something about violence going on in your head. You know, there's already a part of you that is violent conscious, that you will need to defend yourself. You know, violence is already instigated, even though in this time it is for self-defense. You know, so in these lights, and I'm talking, and it wasn't just when I went, it just gave me a picture of what was also going down with the clergy in some of these places when they talk to their people. And when these kind of questions will arise, they will tell them, fight for yourselves. Even though for some people, they will tell them, see, you have to die as a saint or as a martyr. And that's a talk for another day anyway. But I'm just trying to highlight the kind of conversations that went on concerning violence, you know, especially when it comes to the clergy, clergymen and women and all that. Let me yield the mic at this point. Thank you very much for letting me speak.
The issue you touched on is very relevant because, you know, like I've always asked, even on Monday when we talk, I'd ask people, have you read the report? There's a reason for that. It's not like I'm trying to test anybody's academic prowess or whatever. There is a reason why we always ask, have you read some of the report or some of it before you come, so that you can bring out what you've read and dissect it. And this is a perfect example of where we're trying to get at. You see, the stuff about the IDP, when I read it, I kept it to myself because I knew for a fact we've been following the IDP for many, many years. The situation is growing steadily. For those of you who know, it's growing steadily, steadily, steadily. There are millions of Nigerians out there who are in the IDP. And when this election came, right, you looked at it, I don't think there was any voting for many of these camps, you know. So when the report came and I read through the report and it was stated there evidently that the strategies that INEC had were so weak. There was little or no engagement with the IDP camps. There was issues with the planning. There was inconsistencies of majority of their procedures that they wanted to try and employ. Basically, it was a sham, you know. But not only that, just the way the people have been totally cut off. And I think Ojigad said it there, the way they've been really ostracized, like if they're not Nigerians. You know, these are the key things. So when we worry about what Europe is doing or what other people are doing to us, these are people within our own communities. Every community around the north and around the Niger have an IDP camp close to them. So who's making this noise for them? Who's making these observations? So it's just taking the EU to come out and highlight it again. You just have to go into the report and go down the sections and look for, you know, I think it's EU elections observations on IDP or something like that. And then you read this thing, you know, it's so frightening. I'm going to use the word frightening. It's frightening to see that we lack so much empathy, that these people lack so much empathy from a leadership point of view, and that absolutely nothing is being done about it. And then Ojigad, you talked about the vulnerable people and the disabled as well. That's another set of people that were disenfranchised from this election. And the EU report highlighted it as well. You know, it highlights these facts as well. So going forward, you know, it's a situation where these are the things we want to bring out from this report from a value point of view. Look at it for what it is, and like Chris rightfully says, tell ourselves the truth about the impact this will have on us, you know, based on this analysis we're doing with it, so that we know we are not aware. I bet you almost 80% of the people in this space now don't know about what Ojigad just said. We don't. Let's call it spade a spade. Some of us don't. Some of us have not really taken into consideration how distasteful this is. But not to talk about the work now she's now doing. So we've had two value from this. We've had somebody who's actually working and has an awareness of this thing and giving us the real picture of the situation, and then linking it to how valuable this report has come to create the awareness. So there's no excuse for the next government to say they didn't know, you know. So we have our work cut out.
All eyes on the judiciary.